Good morning, all. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 29th of January. A very cold day, very cold morning, but we will warm you with conversation, our soothing personalities. I don't know. Maybe you'll still be cold. Who knows? But it's good to have you all here. Let me introduce the group to you. A reminder that you can join in on the conversation. We have a lot to talk about today. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm here. I'm sipping on my Moroccan mint tea, which my wonderful Roselle has taught me to love as opposed to coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, Moroccan mint tea is lovely.
Exactly.
I used to have that when I would get a tummy ache as a child. My mother would
give you Moroccan mint.
Well, mint. I don't know if I don't know of its origin. I could assume it was Moroccan. I don't know. We also welcome senior fellow and visiting professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics, and former EPA regional administrator Judith Eng. Good morning, Judith. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
Good morning. Very nice to have you here. Siena College economics professor Aaron Pasitti, the man that several times this week people said, I'm sorry, when is Aaron going to be on again? We have questions for Aaron. He's here today. We couldn't be more thrilled. Aaron Pasitti, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm a little tired. I was up all night putting the short squeeze on GameStop. And probably going to move my attention to Blockbuster stock this weekend.
we want to know. We figured we were trying. We were mired in all of that yesterday, and we said we need Aaron to help us figure this out. So we're glad that you're here. David Soares is here as well. He is the man who helps us figure out everything else. Albany County District Attorney. Good morning, David. How are you?
I'd like to see Mr. Chartok's Moroccan mint tea and raise him one hot cup of Cafe du Monde coffee with chicory.
Ooh, chicory.
Oh, chicory. Cafe du Monde. And we know where that is. That's in New Orleans, right?
New Orleans.
No.
Well, good morning, all. I'm glad that you have grabbed the beverage of your choice, and we are ready to go. So let us do so. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. The big story here in New York, but it is now the big story across the country as it's being reported as the lead story, and that is that New York severely undercounted virus deaths in nursing homes, according to a report from the Attorney General of the state. We should note the Democratic Attorney General of the state for a Democratic governor. But here we go. For most of the past year, Governor Andrew Cuomo has tried to brush away a persistent criticism that undermined his national image as the man who led New York through the pandemic, that his policies had allowed thousands of nursing home residents to die of the virus. But Mr. Cuomo was dealt a blow when the New York State Attorney General Letitia James reported on Thursday that Mr. Cuomo's administration had undercounted coronavirus-related deaths of state nursing home residents by the thousands. Just hours later, Ms. James was proved correct as health department officials made public new data that added more than 3,800 deaths to their tally, representing nursing home residents who had died in the hospitals and had not previously been counted by the state as nursing home deaths. The state's acknowledgement increased the overall death toll related to those facilities by more than 40%. However, Ms. James' report had suggested that the state's previous tally could be off by as much as 50%. It's important to note that the findings do not change the overall number of COVID-19 deaths in New York. That number is about 42,000, the most of any state in this country. But the recalculation in the number of nursing home deaths illustrates how unprepared the nursing home industry was in the first and deadliest weeks of the pandemic. Going on in this article from the New York Times, Mr. Cuomo, a third-term Democrat, had long dismissed the critiques of his policies governing those facilities as partisan attacks from the Trump administration and other Republican adversaries. However, the report by Ms. James casts a renewed light on the state's decision to send nursing home residents who had been hospitalized with the coronavirus back to the nursing homes, a policy that Mr. Cuomo has defended as following federal guidelines. However, at the same time, Ms. James' assertion of an undercount of deaths gave credence to theories that the state may have intentionally played down the number of those deaths to avoid blame. Democrats and Republicans were very quick, but many Democrats saying that this is shocking and unconscionable. Some are calling for the removal of Howard Zucker, who heads the state health department, and all of this going on as the pandemic continues to rage in the state and across the country. So, Alan, we'll go to you first, and then we'll dig in with the rest of the group.
Thanks a lot, Joe. Well,
you can punt. You can say pass.
No. Look, this is the most serious charge that this governor has had to deal with, other than the two scoundrels, remember, who turned out were enriching themselves, and they were very close to Cuomo, and that went away very quickly. Now, there's an old saying about the king: if you're going to try to assassinate the king, you better succeed. Because I don't think he's going to be forgetting a lot of the folks now who are piling on. Look, his position, as you just read quite correctly from the Times, I guess, is that the feds told me to do it. I did it. I put these folks back into the nursing homes. And we all know that that was a serious error, because what happened was that a lot of people in nursing homes were vulnerable to begin with, and they got very sick. And this is one that the Republicans have been using and piling on with him. On the other hand, it is also, to my way of thinking, one of those things where we have a terrible virus, so everybody's looking for somebody who's responsible for what happened, and it becomes national news. One would have to think that he would not get by this. He will get by it.
My question, though, is, I mean, sure, even if you're following the CDC guidelines on putting those patients back, which turned out to be bad, then why aren't you reporting the numbers? It would seem that would be all the more reason to say that this federal policy is not good, instead of underreporting the numbers of the people who died.
I agree with you. It was a mistake. That was a bad error, and it's going to cost them. I mean, you know, this is a guy who got tremendous grades for going on CNN every day and talking about what we had to do in order to get by the virus and what we were doing in New York State. You know, as I have said so many times, always tell the truth. If you don't tell the truth, then you really leave yourselves vulnerable. If anybody has to take it in the neck, it's going to be Howard Zucker, who I consider to be a good health commissioner, by the way. But if somebody's got to take the blame, it will not be Andrew. And there's where we are. But, you know, I think Andrew's probably sitting there with a pencil and paper and writing names like Kirsten Gillibrand down on his pad, and other people who have seen this as the moment when Andrew gets broken.
Judith Henk.
Well, this is such a profoundly important issue, and it affects so many families who have been really terrorized by having parents and grandparents in nursing homes. And there's no question that the nursing home industry, especially the for-profit nursing homes, were not prepared. And that's when you need strong regulatory intervention. And that's not really what they got from the New York State Health Department. You know, I think the governor got high marks for dealing with COVID across the board, especially when there was a leadership vacuum from the federal government. However, this has been a consistent criticism and a consistent concern. And what the governor typically does when faced with criticism is not really address the facts and the substantive issues, but they go into defensive crouch, and they attack the person delivering the bad news. I don't know if the public understands how politically brave Attorney General Letitia James is in putting out this report. Because when you go up against this governor, it's not an easy situation to be in. But she I think, fulfilled the statutory obligations of her office. She documented that indeed there was a serious undercount. And I just think the governor needs to acknowledge that this was an emergency situation. Mistakes were made, including mistakes by him. And what a responsible public official owns that and says, look, we were in crisis. We made a bad call. Here are procedures we're putting in place to protect nursing home residents. But instead, Governor Cuomo did what he typically does. You recall in July, he issued a report that was supposed to be independent by McKinsey, where they sought to absolve the state for any responsibility here, which sure looks like a cover-up to me with state tax dollars. So this issue's not going away. I don't care that much about the politics. I do care about what protection is being put in place. And it's also troubling that in the governor's budget, he proposed and got a liability waiver for the nursing home operators so that the nursing home operators are not going to be held accountable here. And it's just an all-around tragic situation for people who lost loved ones here. And I think the governor has to react in a way that is foreign to him. He needs to speak the truth. He needs to take responsibility. I'm not saying he needs to fire anyone. I'm saying he needs to fix the system that allowed this to happen.
Let's go to...
Can I show you one second? I don't disagree with anything you've said, Judith. However, the one thing we don't know in politics is what motivates anybody. Traditionally, an attorney general gets to be governor, and certainly that's the case the last couple of times. So you say it was politically brave. It may have been, and I could certainly go along with that and agree that it looks that way. But it could also be that this is my chance. I want to show my independence on the part of the attorney general, and this will help me further my career.
Well, you know, there was a concern that when Tish James was selected by the governor to replace Eric Schneiderman, that she would not be independent. But it might be her way to politically distinguish herself. But Alan, you know, when the governor feels like someone has been unfair to them, it doesn't often end well for that person. Whatever motivated her, she did the right thing. But she, you know, buckle up, Tish James. This is not going to be a good few weeks for her.
I agree with you.
This is not going to be a good few weeks. David Soares.
Well, you know, listen, so we were in the midst of a pandemic, right? And there was absolutely no playbook. There was no playbook providing instructions as to what you do in case of X. And I think the issue here for our governor is the fact that, you know, he did do so many things correctly, right? But obviously, this is one that, in my opinion, was just a big self-inflicted injury upon himself. Because I think coming out and just being straightforward with the public, providing the different categories of counting, you know, in facility, out of facility, in route, all of those things. I mean, coming out early on and saying, yes, there was underreporting because of these distinctions. And then moving forward, I believe that there was enough time for him to do that. The fact that he chose not to do that and continue to dig that hole that he found himself in, I just think was a tremendous, you know, self-inflicting wound that tarnishes, you know, his role as a national leader on this issue. And it's not one that I think will be easy for him to come back from. Now, as far as the AG is concerned, look, as a prosecutor, you do not get to choose your politics. You know, those cases are chosen for you, and you make your politics based on how you handle, you know, your cases. The fact that this issue was presented to her, and she went about, you know, doing her job professionally and transparently, you know, and putting her own politics aside. I mean, I think some people would view this as her leaning into the politics with intentions. And I view this as clearly a prosecutor just doing, you know, her job and letting the results speak for themselves.
So how do you think this will, so what's the next step for Tish James then, David?
Well, the next step here is continuing to be responsive to the questions that are being sought from her. The reality here is that this report was just recently published. It's a lot for people to digest. Certainly, you know, there are recommendations to be made whenever you are engaged in conducting, you know, an investigation that ultimately results in a report. There are recommendations. And so I think, in my opinion, I think the governor should be listening to the AG and joining the AG and looking to constructively, you know, search for best practices and then promise to move forward together to implement those best practices. That's the only thing you can do.
You know what's interesting here, David and group, when Cuomo was the attorney general, he took great vows for having gone after Elliot Spitzer, right? Are we all agreed on that? Is there anybody who
Absolutely.
Remembers that far back? Yeah.
So I remember.
So here you have history repeating itself in a way. Now, of course, what Cuomo was accused of doing is not criminal, which is what I think happened with Spitzer. But it is interesting to watch history repeat itself in a way here.
Well, and
although I would say this is much worse. I mean, Elliot Spitzer obviously made bad personal judgments, but those judgments did not result in thousands of people dying in nursing homes due to some very flawed policies.
I don't think I made that case, or if I did...
I just want to make the distinction.
I want to apologize if anybody takes it that way. I didn't mean it that way. All I meant is...
About 10 seconds.
In New York state politics, that's the way the ball bounces.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll hear from Aaron, and we'll get letters and go on with this conversation for a little bit. We'll be right back. I know there are a lot of questions around this AG report, but I have to say for us here in the newsroom, the big question is, will there be an 11:30 briefing? There usually is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So we're very curious to see whether the governor will speak today at 11:30.
If there is, Joe, will he hold his temper?
Right. What exactly will be said? So we'll find out all of that, I guess, a little bit later on. Aaron, I want you to add to this conversation, and then I'll go to the letters that we have.
Sure. I think my colleagues did a pretty good job summarizing the main issues. It's very unfortunate, but these things happen when there's, just an unexpected pandemic and a complete and total leadership vacuum at the federal level, and Cuomo should just come out and own it and make very clear what policies are in place so that moving forward, this is no longer an issue. And I really hesitate to say this because I don't want to sound conspiratorial, but I have to imagine this was happening not just in New York, given the leadership vacuum, I wouldn't be surprised if things were happening similar to this, perhaps not on the same scale, in other states.
But why do you, and this is a question for the group, but why then do you alter the numbers? It would seem to me that if you were trying to, even as a Democratic governor, up against a Republican administration, that you would want to show the error of their ways. And a way of doing that is to say, this is how many people died as a result of this really bad policy, instead of saying, okay, we're going to comply with this federal mandate and not report the correct number of people who actually died.
Yeah, it's just not really credible, because the governor rightly pushed back on a number of federal policies related to COVID. You can't kind of like, you know, stand behind the skirt of Donald Trump on this one. And what was really striking was the attorney general said in her report that there was essentially a 50% undercount of nursing home deaths. And within hours, the New York State Health Department put out some new data and said there was a 40% undercount. So they obviously had the information. They were withholding it. And another pattern of the Cuomo administration, which sounds really wonky but is important, is they really slow walk or ignore freedom of information requests from reporters and from the public, to the point that Empire Center for Public Policy, which is a very conservative think tank and is entitled to public information like everyone else, they have filed a lawsuit against the Cuomo administration to just get basic, complete data on COVID and on nursing home deaths. So obviously, the state had the numbers because they released it within hours of the Attorney General report. If the Attorney General report did not come out, would they have ever clarified the true count?
I want to go, before we go back to the letters or go to the letters, I want to go back to something that David had mentioned, which is, look, we all saw this coming, right? I mean, this has been a complaint and something that's been on the governor's radar for months and months and months since March, really, as the policy was unfolding. So you would think that there would be a better response, right, David? I mean, it's not like this is a surprise. It may have been a surprise that his AG would come out with this report, but that there was criticism and numbers, you would think that the answer would be better at this point.
And that's where you kind of scratch your head and pick up your jaw, because, you know, as Judith was correct to point out, there have been a number of FOIL requests for this information, and you could slow walk it, but you cannot prevent the public from getting that information. So you were bound to have this information out there. So it's shocking that they've been slow walking this thing and they didn't prepare a better response, knowing that it's been lingering. That's number one. And then number two, the response that they did actually provide is just so shocking. You know, the fact that it's like, oh, no, we're going to quibble over whether it's 50% or 40%. I don't know that makes a difference in the minds of the people who this morning are receiving this information.
You know, so much of what we see in these kinds of situations comes down to a matter of character. In other words, what is the character of the person who is leading the troops and who has to respond to this? I've often used the term with Cuomo, who I confess I like on a personal level. I call him Tough Guy Andrew. And Tough Guy Andrew goes into a crouch, and this is where character counts, because, as you say, David, the right thing, and Judith, the right thing to do would simply clear the decks and say, okay, either we made a mistake or the original policy wasn't a good one and you got gotten out from under it. But the Republicans have been riding this horse all along. And this is why, you know, the way in which you react becomes very important.
And it's really too bad that the Republicans are exploiting this terrible tragedy for their own political gain, you know, she said naively. You know, they're gonna ride this one, and it's unfortunate. But I think if you put them aside, because a lot of them, it's just noise. You know, the problem with this governor, if I may dare say, buckling up here, is he and his agencies never admit a mistake. And you cannot govern in New York State, a state so large and so challenging, without sometimes acknowledging that you've made a mistake, and more importantly, you've learned from it and you're gonna move on. I see this on environmental issues time and time again.
In New York,
the State Health Department. Oh, yeah. Excuse me?
Okay. In New York, you mean, right?
In New York, yeah.
Yes.
New York, the New York State Health Department really screwed up when it came to drinking water in Hoosick Falls, where they let people drink contaminated water for 18 months. Never admitted that mistake, and then attacked the messenger, me and others. They're making the same mistake with the Norlite hazardous waste incinerator in Cohoes. Just yesterday, independent data came out pointing to a serious problem. The state says, oh, this problem is everywhere. It may not be particular to Norlite, because it would illustrate that they have failed as being able to effectively regulate this facility. So character does come from the top in something that has infiltrated all of the state agencies. Is I think their mantra is never admit a mistake. And if you don't admit the mistake, it leads to them not fixing the mistake. And in the case of nursing homes and contaminated drinking water and environmental problems at Norlite, New Yorkers suffer from this management style. People get sick from it. People sometimes die from it. And that's why it's not just like a weird personality quirk. It has really, you know, serious implications.
I thought the report, I was surprised by the report that came out. The statement that followed the 76-page report from the AG's office that came from the health commissioner, Dr. Zucker. It was many hours later after the report was issued. And I just, and this goes back to what I was talking to David with just a moment ago. You would think if you had time, you could come up with something better than what they came up with, which was, Dr. Zucker said that the state website had always been clear that deaths it listed did not include deaths outside of a facility. The word undercount implies that there are more total fatalities than have been reported. This is factually wrong. So they're making the case saying, well, the number we gave you of the people that died is accurate. But the report says, okay, that's fine, but the number of people that you said died who were nursing home residents is inaccurate and is undercounted, which his statement doesn't seem to answer that issue.
So the question
The question that I have, and it'd be interesting to hear Alan's opinion, because I think he knows the players very well. So the question that I have is just how many calls, did the AG receive from the second floor in an effort to either get an early preview of the report, to influence, you know, the writing of the report? Because I even, you know, maybe I'm just a bit cynical, but I think that even in Dr. Zucker providing that response and picking out that specific response just leads me to believe that he probably had the report a little earlier and could develop that response from having access to it a bit earlier. But I'd be interested in knowing that.
Mm. Yeah, we really don't know. But you can be sure that Andrew saw it coming, because that's the kind of person he is. You know, he knows what's coming and he prepares for it. I don't know what else to tell you except that this was a mistake.
All right.
Yeah, I want to, if I could just briefly mention two other things. Joe, you nicely quoted parts of the health department response. Another sentence in the response was that Zucker said the health department doesn't disagree that the number of people transferred from a nursing home to a hospital is an important data point. Data point. These are people. I mean, it just shows like a tone deafness here.
So Judith, does Zucker go? Does Zucker go? Look, somebody's got to fall on the sword here, right?
Yeah, if I was betting today, I would say no, because that would mean that the Cuomo administration made a mistake. I don't think they're going to let Zucker go over this. I mean, he was supposed to show up at a budget hearing in the legislature this week, and he ducked it. You've got Democratic legislators threatening to subpoena data I think he's going to have a really rough ride, but my guess is Cuomo is going to tell him to stay put, because if Zucker leaves, it acknowledges that serious mistakes were made.
Although if Zucker leaves, what he says is on the way out the door, I have become a distraction. We've seen this before, by the way.
Yes.
I've become
cut
a distraction.
And
And
yes.
we have a wonderful governor, but it doesn't serve him well for me to remain in the job. That's what he would say.
Yeah. I think you may be right. I think it's all going to just come down to a political decision. Dick Gottfried, who's the chair of the Assembly Health Committee, was quoted in the Times saying that this is shocking and unconscionable. So I don't think he's going to be satisfied with just a quick exit by Zucker. The legislature really needs to dig in here.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a break. We have many letters on the subject, so I want to get to those. And we'll continue our conversation, then we'll move on to other stuff. We'll do all of that right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, Aaron Vasidi, and David Soares on the panel this morning.
When we left, I was just trying to say something. I apologize for not being more sensitive to our time constraints, except that today is the day that the lockbox opens, and we get to take a peek inside of it in order to make sure that this radio station survives. And that's what it's all about, enough money to do it. And we want to thank everybody who's been sending in money, and there are a lot of people, to the point where we opened the lockbox, Joe. I wonder if you could take it from here. And what did we see?
I didn't know we opened it yet. I thought we were doing that Monday.
You're right. Today isn't Monday. I apologize. I lifted it up and I took a look in there. There's a lot of money in there. Why would I have thought this was Monday?
I don't know. Can
we just confirm that it's Moroccan mint tea and nothing else?
Yeah. It's just tea, David.
You are so right, and I am so corrected and ashamed.
No, no reason to be ashamed.
I want to admit to our wonderful audience that, that I got it wrong, because I'm taking a page, as Judith would say, out of certain other people's books, having to admit that they got something wrong.
It's all good. Here are the two takeaways from our conversation we just had. One is Monday we're going to open the lockbox and we're going to start raising money. Two is we do know we have a lot of money, and but we still have more to make. We think we can do it in a very short period of time. We hope we can. And that's what we're going to do on Monday. So be ready. Buckle up. It'll be a lot of fun. Right. And if you want to help out before and get it done and get it out of the way, you can do it right now.
At 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206, or WAMC.org. Wouldn't it be great, Joe, if we arrived on Monday and it was all done?
That would be really cool. That would be really, really cool. All right. Let's see. We got a lot of letters, so let's go to them. I will say most, just to give you an idea, most of them are siding with a governor here, but we'll go through them. Susan says, as a retired RN and a daughter of a parent who was pushed back and forth between hospital and nursing home, Medicare will only pay for so many days for nursing home care. Hospitals will only get reimbursement if the patient is getting treatment, and the limits are coming from the Fed. As for the count, they can only count where they died, not where they lived before they died. But the issue was that they were sending them back to the nursing homes, and then when they died, those numbers were not accurate, right? Do I have that correct? I think
that's correct.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So then we go to Bob. Andrew has known this issue since its onset. The governor was a victim of the panic of February through April of last year, and no one knew what was correct. It's typical for Republicans to seek blood over an issue that their national leader created.
And Joe, we got a long, long letter from Wendy, so I can't read the whole thing.
I need you on mic.
Oh, You are once again correct. my mistake. I'm so sorry. Slap. Anyway, we got a long letter from Wendy, who says, and I'm going to just read the second paragraph. I don't know if it'll work. I think the governor was expressing anger over this. I remember hearing his anger at the time when he made the case that nursing homes had to take their residents back, had in big, bold letters. I do think he dropped the ball and did not include what will happen if we send them back and the nursing homes are unprepared. He left the nursing homes on their own, which was exactly his complaint about the federal government as states were, quote, left on their own. And then he got defensive in his response, which is never a good response. It's a complicated situation with gratitude, and that's from Wendy.
All right. We got this from Dan, who says, Democratic Circular Firing Squad, you guys are prejudging Cuomo before the final facts are revealed, just like the Al Franken issue. The pressure a Democrat has to deal with is so much heavier than that of their Republican counterparts. A president and several members of Congress started an insurrection and nothing will be done. Some numbers are incorrect, and you guys want to put Cuomo's head on a pike.
Did anybody remember that?
I don't remember that, actually. I think we were...
Well,
Joe, it seems to me that the staff over at the second floor definitely know the how to generate letters and write them to you.
come on. You are so cynical.
Mark says, last night I streamed PBS Frontline, Trump's American Carnage. It really sheds light on the hypocrisy of two U.S. senators that continue to hold seats and significant influence. They will be jurors in impeachment trial 2.0. And this really has nothing to do with COVID. So I will get back to that one. How does that, to the nursing home issue. Norm says, when someone from a nursing home dies in the hospital, are they a nursing home death or a hospital death? If you haven't got enough beds in the hospitals, is there another choice then to move people to nursing homes who have staff? As sad as the numbers are in general, how many people were saved by rotating access to hospitals?
And I think that was Cuomo's point, at the point at which he demanded that they take them back.
The, let's see, we go to Paul. Why is this a daring move by Tish James, from which she may have a couple of difficult weeks ahead of her and or dig herself out?
What do you mean?
I think they're asking about why will this be, we had said that it'll be a tough time for Tish James.
Right. Well, so, I think there are some who believe that Andrew will strike back, the empire will strike back.
Yeah, I mean, I think like that's a really fair question for people who don't follow inside baseball of Albany, you normal people. They're of the same party, and when Governor Cuomo is criticized, he has a tendency to really go after the person that's mounting the criticism. And yes, AG often stands for aspiring governor, but I think that this was a politically brave thing for Attorney General James to do, because on one hand, as Alan said, she may be kind of creating her lane for a future run, but the governor has a lot of political and financial support in New York State. And if he puts the word out not to support Tish James, she will not get support from those quarters. You know, normally you would applaud her for her independence, bringing important facts to light. The fact that the health department revised their numbers within hours of her report coming out, I think validates the accuracy of her report. But we all know that the governor does not welcome constructive criticism of his administration, and he inevitably will not make her life a pleasant one.
You know, that's interesting. You know, for 8 years, I criticized Cuomo severely. I really did. I was very tough on him. And then one day, Ian Pickus, our wonderful news director, knocked on the door and said, the governor wants to do a show, and then did like 50 of them in a row afterwards. Now, that's not, Judith, I don't want to argue the fact with you, but that's not the mark of somebody who takes no prisoners and never forgives.
Yeah, I don't want to get into that, but I think Alan you know, in Albany, if you're critical of the governor, that's not a comfortable place for people to be, especially if they don't, you know, have a big microphone.
Uh-huh.
Judith, I think he knows. I think he knows. I think that's the Moroccan mentee talking. And I also find it ironic that we're having a conversation about a prosecutor, you know, doing her job, mm-hmm. and then having to be concerned with retribution, since that seems to be the theme right now nationally, about the former president and, you know, the unwillingness of one very specific party in the Senate not willing to do their job. So this is, you know, I don't think New York is, this is something that's going on nationally. I don't think it's very exclusive to us here in the Capital District, but I think we would be naive and silly not to understand that that is part of the someone in the political camp, you know, the Attorney General's office is, you know, having to consider those things.
Mm. Edward writes to us and says, when someone is released from the hospital, aren't they cured of whatever? Why does sending them back to nursing home jeopardize them or the residents? Please explain if there is there data showing any of this. Well, at the height of the pandemic, the concern was, yeah, that you once you put them back into that controlled environment, that it was going to spread.
Also, where were they going to go?
Right.
In other words, the hospitals were running out of space. They came from a nursing home. The theory was you put them back where they came from, although it turned out to be a bad theory.
Well, there are a couple layers to this. Some of them that returned were still infectious.
Right.
And the Cuomo report in July blamed that on nursing home staff. Underpaid nursing home staff apparently were spreading the infection, not the returning patients. And I think that has been proven not to necessarily be the case. And I was thinking about this morning. If someone's being discharged from the hospital and you say they can't come back to the nursing home, where are they going to go? And that's where you needed.
Exactly.
But that's where you needed the smart innovation that Governor Cuomo often displays. For instance, remember he got the giant Mercy ship to come
right
to the banks of the Hudson, and he worked with the Army Corps of Engineers to open the Javits Center. There were lots of empty hotels in New York City. Look, I haven't, you know, thoroughly reviewed this, but there could have been an innovative approach where rather than going back to nursing homes, there could have been alternate housing with, you know, I think the hard thing is, would there be enough skilled nursing support for those
folks? You should have been the governor. Or as the old saying goes, coulda, shoulda, woulda. Always very easy to do that after the fact, right?
Yeah, the governor did. He was very innovative when pressed under a lot of pressure. But on the nursing home issue, he was not. And the fact that his budget included a liability waiver for nursing home operators is worrisome. I think the deeper issue here that I hope journalists will look at is just the role of for-profit nursing homes and how unprepared they were to deal with the situation.
And then the second issue. Time. And it won't be the first time. If you go back to Stanley Steingut, remember him? Same issues.
Kinda. Okay, first of all, we have to take a break. Second of all, we have one question that was answered 47 seconds ago because the governor put out a press release that he will be having a briefing at 11:30 this morning. So we will be covering that, of course. That will be live at 11:30 or whenever he actually starts it. So that will be something to stay tuned for this morning. In the meantime, we'll continue talking. We have more letters, and then we want to get to Aaron, who is going to explain GameStop to us and so much more. This is are you ready? Are you ready for this?
In your seatbelts.
Okay. You ready, Aaron?
Oh, yeah.
All right, good.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
And don't forget to send your money to 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206, so we can have these programs. Right, Joe?
Absolutely. Or WAMC.org. You can go online and do it right now. It's counted right away, and all is cool. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Friday. We welcome you to join us. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Okay, so we started talking about this yesterday, and this story obviously continues today, that the question about GameStop stock and the swings and the Reddit campaign, what is happening? And we touched on it yesterday, and we were saying, oh, my God, I wish that Aaron were here, and now he's here. So, Aaron, please explain to us what is happening and why, most importantly, why this is a big deal.
Yeah, so that brings up an interesting point. There's two ways of looking at this. There's the big picture. This is a fairly trivial novelty in the grand scheme. We have 10 million unemployed people. There's been 8 million people who have fallen into poverty since March. 10% of the population is food insecure. What's happening in a narrow corner of the internet and stock market is really tangential to the current economic malaise. That said, this is kind of a interesting story because it's the first time you really see a concerted effort to essentially corner the stock, essentially have concerted action in terms of buying the stock to drive up the price. And there doesn't seem to be any legitimate reason why GameStop and AMC movie theaters and a handful of other companies should be experiencing, you know, a tripling of their stock price in the past 2 or 3 days. So how this came to be was that, you know, GameStop had some positive developments in terms of its corporate management, but it was hit hard, like AMC, with the pandemic. So you could make an argument that there were some forces that could have driven up the stock price prior to the pandemic. Then the pandemic hit and the stock price fell. But what seems to be happening now is that, you know, concerted action among individual investors is driving up the price of the stock, primarily to screw hedge funds who have shorted the stock. So shorting a stock is when you're essentially making a bet on the price of a stock to fall. And it's part of a very healthy functioning financial market that allocates capital, that, you know, firms that investors think are overvalued get shorted, which drives their share price down and moves capital to firms who need it. So what seems to be happening now are individual investors seem to be on a power trip that they have the ability to drive prices up, which makes anybody holding a short option on GameStop at risk of losing massive amounts of money. The hedge funds who are primarily shorting GameStop are the ones who are going to be hit hardest by this, because as the price goes up, the losses from that short investment increase exponentially. My bigger concern is that a lot of individual investors are going to lose a lot of money on this. The share price of GameStop is going to come down, whether it happens today, whether it happens next week, whether it happens a month from now. Inflated stock values, you know, tripling in this case in the span of a couple days, will always revert back to a more sensible level. That's just a more technical way of saying bubbles always pop. So the people who are buying, you know, GameStop stock now that think they're, you know, giving it to these hedge funds, stand to lose a lot of money when the share price falls. There is nothing fundamental supporting the current share price of GameStop or AMC or any of these other companies that have been part of this concerted action. So, you know, okay, so if individual investors are willing to lose money to prove that they can influence the returns that hedge funds are getting on one particular, you know, short option, just seems to be really financially irresponsible. It's introducing a lot of volatility into the stock market as a whole. And one thing hedge funds love is volatility in stock markets. That's where hedge funds make all their money. So the irony here is that these individual investors think they're sticking it to hedge funds by driving the price of this up and increasing the losses that the hedge funds that are shorting GameStop are experiencing. But the volatility they're creating will be taken advantage of by many, many, many large institutional investors who will make billions of dollars, if not more, on this volatility. So, you know, in the long run, I think the joke's on the individual investors who are going to lose a lot of money while hedge funds gain a lot of money.
Now, when you say individual investors, obviously, somebody didn't, a whole bunch of people didn't wake up in their pajamas in the morning and scratch their heads, right, Aaron, and say, okay, I think I'll do this now. Something had to be putting it all together.
Yeah, well, Reddit was putting it all together, as far as I can tell. There's an interesting analogy to draw here between the coup attempt on January 6th and what's happening now. A lot of people are getting worked up by some incendiary rhetoric, and they're making very ill-informed choices that are going to come back and ultimately hurt them as individuals. Now, you can say there might be a larger political purpose to what these individual investors are doing, but it's pretty easy to take advantage of, you know, mob psychology and euphoria and use that mania to, you know, accomplish some objective, whatever that might be. So, I think a lot of people are buying into this and just being like, yeah, now's a good time to get in. Let's see if we can drive the price up further and maybe I can make more money on it. Yeah, that works if you can time it correctly. But historically, it's very difficult to time when prices are going to, shoot or fall through the floor.
So the Dow ended, 300 points up yesterday. It's down, I think, 180 now, or 190. My question to you is, as an economist, is this really cool and fascinating, or do you think it's just silly?
I think it's silly. The Robinhood apps and brokerage accounts that have, you know, low or no fees to make trades are a good thing, theoretically, in terms of democratizing, investment in companies and markets. But I think what you're seeing is, the potential for a lot of abuse, these are people who are arguably unaffiliated with GameStop. Imagine what would happen if, say, I'm just picking this example at random, United Air or General Electric was able to hire a bunch of people to drive up the price of their share on a social media forum, and then the smart money gets out while the price is high, and then they remove that. The people who get hurt in situations like that are not big Wall Street hedge funds. Sure, some might lose some money. Some might be driven to the point of bankruptcy where they need emergency rescuing. But in the grand scheme of things, large-scale institutional investors are going to come out on top, and a lot of individual investors are going to be left holding the proverbial hot potato and lose a lot of money. So I think it's trivial, and it has some potential to introduce some fairly dangerous activities in financial markets. So it'll be interesting to see how the SEC responds and what the legal implications, if any, there are for this activity. And I am not an expert in securities law, so I can't really comment on that. This is all public information, but it's clearly cornering a stock and driving its price up And a lot of people are going to make money by selling when the price is high. And then once they start selling their stock, the price comes down. And then everybody starts unloading. And, you know, the last ones out are going to be the ones who lose the most money.
Okay, so just for the uninitiated like me, who's Reddit again?
So,
I was just on it. It's great.
It's an internet platform where, you know, there's, you know, little rooms, for lack of a better term, where people can share information and analysis of any topic they want.
So it's a social media platform, basically.
Yes. Aaron, you should go on Reddit. They have a section called Ask Me Anything. That I was on that on the other day. You should register to go on Reddit, and you basically just type answers to questions for an hour and a half. You would be very good at explaining this.
Oh, and it can be just like here. You do a lot of work, and we don't pay you. It'd be great.
I'm used to that. I'm an academic. Come on.
It's fascinating. Aaron did a great job, says Joseph, of explaining the short squeeze on GameStop, except for the fact that hedge funds routinely take huge short positions, betting the stock will go down. They will issue a news statement that does, in fact, drive the stock down, making a ton of money. The Reddit folks decided to run up the price, forcing the hedge funds to cover their down bets and costing them a fortune. Suddenly, the big guys are not in charge, and they don't like it. Do you disagree with any of that, Aaron?
It's just like the coup. Like when those people stormed the Capitol, what did they ultimately prove? And that's the question I keep coming back to. Like, are people willing to take losses on buying the stock to prove that they have the ability to drive some hedge funds to the brink of bankruptcy? I just fundamentally don't understand the logic behind what they're doing, aside from individual power trips.
Then Kevin writes and says, what is the difference between Redditors buying huge amounts of GameStop and AMC and corporations getting huge tax breaks and buying a bunch of their own shares?
There is an important distinction. Corporations can buy back their stocks that's what happened from the 2017 tax cut, is that when corporate taxes went down, corporations were flush with cash. They engaged in stock buybacks, which drove the price of their share up. You could argue that that's bad economics, and I think it is. But the point is that when companies buy back their share price, buy back their stocks, they're not driving the price of their share up 300%. This is a classic mania and a classic bubble, and these prices will come down. And, you know, if hedge funds can outweigh the individual investors, then they will ultimately make money on their short positions, while, you know, individual investors lose a lot of money thinking that this share price is going to go up.
We go to Dave, who said,
the important point here is that, just let me add one more thing, is that the increase in share prices over the past couple days of GameStop and AMC are not driven by fundamentals. It's not like these companies have a new management plan and are going to all of a sudden released it and said, we're going to be profitable because of these changes over the next 6 months. This is an increase in price that is detached from any increase in corporate performance or expected profitability.
I'm reading Adam's letter just for creativity's sake. Shorting can help provide a soft landing for dropping stock, and GameStop fans should also want them to have capital to survive and adapt. But sure, they are having fun Bugs Bunnying the hedge FUDs. See what he did there? Okay. Dave says, would your expert panelist, that would be you, Aaron, be willing to explain why short selling in the market is allowed in the first place? Isn't that the heart of the problem? And isn't short selling in essence just another word for gambling?
Isn't the whole stock market?
This is casino capitalism. This is betting on prices to go up or down that have no effect on the broader economy or the 10 million people who are out of a job. You know, this is individual people spinning the roulette wheel, hoping they make money by picking the right number and getting out on time.
You know, Aaron, I'm the perfect guy to be asking you these questions because I have no idea what's going on. But I do have this question for you. You made the analogy to the people who went into the Capitol, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the theory was, what were they doing except fooling around? What if they thought they were not only fooling around, but they thought they could really take it all over? And then what's the analogy?
Well, that's possible. Admittedly, that analogy is a bit of a stretch. It's that there was a lot of mania and euphoria that drove people to do things that might have been in conflict with their self-interest in terms of, like, not going to jail. But there was no, you know, clear plan in terms of what the ultimate objective was. And then you could argue that, yes, making sure that Trump remains president was an objective.
Absolutely.
So to the extent that that's an analogy, what's happening with GameStop seems to be even more decentralized and less organized. It's a bunch of people proving that they can stick it to hedge funds. But in the process, a lot of people who get swept up in that mania are going to lose money by buying high, and then when the share price comes down, either through regulatory action or people just realizing that the game's over and it's time to cash out, are going to lose money.
So let us then slightly turn, Aaron, and we only have a minute or two for this, so I apologize for the shortchanging I'm going to have to have for you with this. But so the economic plan that the Biden administration is proposing, which they say is gaining traction on Capitol Hill, what are your initial thoughts on that and the overall health of the economy as a result of such action?
A plan like this should have been passed in the summer, but it wasn't. I think Biden's plan is good. The biggest risk to the economy and the recovery is that this relief package is too small. Aiming small is not a way to save the financial health of 10 million unemployed workers and families that are falling behind on their mortgage and rent and people who are experiencing food insecurity. This package is the appropriate size and it's targeted more or less correctly in terms of helping the most vulnerable. I think that the whole concept of seeking bipartisanship or a bipartisan agreement on this plan is just a fantasy. It's been clear for the past 25 years that Republicans are not willing to compromise. So I don't understand why Biden's trying to, reach out to them when, they've already made up their mind about the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump. This is not a party who's interested in governing or helping families who are struggling during the pandemic. And I think it's just time to move past that and get the bill passed as soon as possible through whatever means necessary.
All right, let's go to some letters, and that'll bring us to our bottom of the hour, and then we'll come back and finish up. Josh writes, is it possible that Tish James is inoculating Cuomo from the incoming GOP attack from Stefanik by popping the pimple early?
No.
That would be a no, a hard no.
That would be no and yuck.
Yeah, I'm with you, Judith. Yeah, no, and don't use that analogy, please. Okay, but yes, interesting. Also, Louisa says, I listened to every one of Governor Cuomo's updates. He clearly said repeatedly that if individual nursing homes could not adequately care for their people returning from hospitals, they needed to say so and not take them back. Why is no one making that point? Seems like an important one to make. All right. Cuomo said on the radio many months ago, says Tony, nursing homes are responsible for accepting patients only if the nursing home is capable of proper care of all patients, similar to the previous letter. So if the individual nursing home cannot provide safe care for all, the nursing home should have refused to readmit the patient. At the time, Cuomo said the state would find an alternative safe place for patients if the nursing home had to refuse admission. Remember? Asks Tony. Bob says, I agree. Yeah, go ahead.
I think some of the letter writers today are having a probably one too many sips of the Moroccan mint tea either. Yeah. Now to put this on the nursing homes is just, to me, absurd.
Now, but both things can be right. I mean, to Judah's point earlier, there are serious concerns and issues within the nursing home, quote unquote, system that need to be addressed, and I think that's been the case for a long, long time. That's one
Correct.
Issue. But then there's also the very specific issue within the confines of the 76-page report from the Attorney General of New York State, which says that the numbers that were given by the governor's office were off from what they actually were that the nursing homes were providing the state. So those are two different things, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, those are two different things. And I think the job right now of the legislative body that has direct oversight over the nursing homes, I think they're probably number one on their agenda for returning for this session should be conducting a much more thorough investigation where there are, you know, leadership from those nursing homes that are brought to the Capitol and you know, testify under oath.
Bob says, I agree Andrew Cuomo should simply admit the error. However, who else is to blame? Any chance large nursing home owners / lobbies are to blame? We'll leave that question open as we have to go to a break. When we come back, we'll have our last go-around. I want to talk about the GM move on electric cars, and much more. We'll do all of that right after the short break. The big announcement from General Motors yesterday said that it would phase out petroleum-powered cars and trucks and sell only vehicles that have zero tailpipe emissions by 2035, a seismic shift by one of the world's largest automakers that makes billions of dollars today from gas-guzzling pickup trucks and sport utility vehicles. The announcement is likely to put pressure on automakers around the world to make similar commitments. It could also embolden President Biden and other elected officials to push for even more aggressive policies to fight climate change. Leaders could point to GM's decision as evidence that even big businesses have decided that it's time for the world to begin to transition away from fossil fuels that have powered the global economy for more than a century. Well, Judith, what do you make of this?
I'm so happy and so relieved that a company like General Motors is finally acknowledging the seriousness of climate change. This is important because transportation makes up about 28% of all greenhouse gases. So this is key. And the electric car industry really needs a boost. Right now, only about 2% of United States cars are electric cars. This is a real turnaround for GM because they were one of the few companies that stood with Trump when he relaxed fuel efficiency standards. So I think this is an illustration that elections indeed really matter. You know, I'm going to, of course, want a little bit more here. For instance, they're going to only sell zero emission vehicles by 2035. Senator Schumer has staked out a pretty bold position on climate change and electric vehicles. He wants the shift to happen by 2030, which I think is right. We also need trucks and buses to go electric. And, you know, a lot of work to do to support more mass transit. and a lot of infrastructure investment. Not only is GM going to spend $27 billion in producing electric vehicles, but at the same time, we need charging stations to be more plentiful, more convenient, and they need to charge faster. So I think this GM announcement is a seismic shift in the auto industry. And I think it is really welcomed. And when I say I'm relieved, I really am, because we are running out of time, and having a company like GM make this commitment is really encouraging.
Judith, I have a question for you. I can't wait for this to happen. As a matter of fact, I'll be 93 when it does happen. What happens in the meantime? Is this graduated? In other words, is your understanding that we have to wait for the 14 years, or is this stuff going to happen as we go?
I think it will be gradual. And it, again, this is just new cars. So their goal is by 2035 to only be selling all electric vehicles. And they say zero emissions. You might even see fuel cell vehicles become more affordable, et cetera. But I think the goal is by 2040 in the whole country not to have any fossil fuel combustion vehicles sold in the U.S. So I think this is going to be a gradual thing as people replace old cars with new cars. The goal is to make these new cars zero emission.
More to your point, Judith, with what you said about Senator Schumer. Look, I think our Congress right now, and we need to be moving forward with a major infrastructure bill that puts, you know, a lot of people back to work. And part of that infrastructure bill has to include, you know, preparing our nation for the eventuality that we're going to have, you know, non-combustible engines on our roads. And we could start by doing that right now. I don't know that you're going to have the willingness, at least in half of the Senate, but we need to actually be reaching into a lot of these tough districts and laying the groundwork for that.
Yeah. And what Schumer says over and over again is this will lead to many more American jobs. And he's right. Another point I want to make, people often ask me, well, the electricity has to come from somewhere. Don't you still have pollution from power plants? And the answer to that is yes, but power plants typically have pollution controls. And when, you know, the emissions are, when they're coming from a power plant as opposed to an individual car combustion engine, when you do the comparison, it's better to have the electric vehicle. But the really, really exciting thing is our electricity grid is shifting to renewables. So if you've got a grid that is getting its electricity from solar, wind, low-level hydro, et cetera, you're essentially, you may be plugging, by the time this deadline hits, you may be plugging into a primarily renewable electricity grid. So again, creating more green jobs. So this will have a multiplier effect that will help drive down greenhouse gas emissions just in the nick of time.
This also comes on the heels of, right on the heels of the Biden administration announcing that they wanted their entire fleet of cars to be electric as well.
Right, which includes, you know, all the post office vehicles, military vehicles. Wednesday was a big day. Biden and his outstanding climate change team made a number of announcements, everything from electric vehicles to not allowing oil and gas drilling on public lands. You know, they're getting it all right. The one thing, though, that still needs attention is we need to stop building fossil fuel infrastructure. If you're building pipelines and power plants and fracked plastic facilities, these are multi-billion-dollar investments that are going to be around for decades. So, you know, I can't get too overjoyed, although I'm pretty overjoyed. But we need to make sure that while we're ramping up renewables and electric vehicles, and communities are divesting their pension funds from fossil fuels, let's stop building the fossil fuel infrastructure. That would be the trifecta.
I hope you're not too overjoyed to take some questions from our cynical listeners.
Why would that be any different from my daily life? Bring it.
Ted writes, GM doesn't care about the environment. This is a business decision. VW, Nissan, Toyota will eat their lunch if they don't follow.
I don't care. I mean, I think there is a business case for environmental protection. I don't care why they're doing it. I care that they are doing it.
Mike says, although it's a step in the right direction, the GM has said they're moving to all electric by 2035. I don't think it's impactful as you may want. It only applies to small cars and trucks. Everything midsize and above will still be running off of gas and diesel. They will continue to still produce a significant number of vehicles running on petroleum.
I don't think that's right. They did 2035 to cover, passenger cars, vans, SUVs. Maybe it's not the whole fleet, but I think that's a lot. SUVs, vans, passenger cars. Okay, so not the pickup trucks, but I still applaud this.
Another success for Elon Musk, says Raul. When he started Tesla, he said his goal was to prove electric vehicles were viable and force other auto companies to make them. Then we go to Jim. So who's going to pay for getting all the new electricity to everyone?
Well, you're paying for gas at the gas station. And the new electricity will actually be cheaper, particularly if it is renewables. And also, Schumer has proposed the way to promote zero emissions is if you buy a new electric car, you will get a pretty substantial tax incentive to do that, which of course federal taxpayers have to pay for, but it's a lot cheaper than offering subsidies for drilling for oil and gas on public lands.
All right, this is an admittedly off-topic question from Ed, who says, does anyone remember the weekly presidential radio address? It was a long-standing tradition, but President Trump did only a few, did them half-heartedly, and then just gave up. Is President Biden going to reestablish them? If so, how does the opposing party select their speaker for the Republican response? That's an interesting question. I don't know an answer to it, but it's an interesting question.
But I think clearly somebody up in political land makes a decision for the party, probably the Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee do that. Although, certainly enough Congress people come out, so this may be something that they decide on together.
But it would be nice to get back to the radio address. It was sort of the one nod to radio, right? I like that.
Can't disagree with that, but I also think Biden should go on Reddit and answer questions
that's
that way.
Funny.
Take stock, give stock advice with Aaron. Thank you.
And I can tag team it. That sounds great.
Let's see. I find the idea that the free market is really only free for those running it to be extremely elitist. Nonsense. This isn't the first bubble and it won't be the last. I'm having some trouble finding sympathy for hedge funders. Who was it again that crushed our economy in 2008? Not a Reddit group. Let's see. Go ahead.
Hedge funds are destabilizing. Individual investors aren't going to move the market in a way that would reproduce the financial crisis of 2008.
Tom says, so Aaron is fine with big institutional investors manipulating the market, but when the small individual investor tries to affect the market, it's wrong? Give me a break. Yes, I'm fine with losing my small investment in GameStop to send a message to the greedy hedge fund jerks.
Yeah, I mean, hedge fund, we have a system, a regulatory system, a legal framework that is designed to benefit the financial industry. So if this makes people feel good about themselves, that's great. They're not going to win. So we can We should be having a talk about better ways to regulate the financial sector so that it works for individuals as well as corporations, who should really be acting as the servants of individual investors and not betting for themselves. But unfortunately, that is not the reality we live in.
So two questions left that we'll have time for. One from Regina, who said, it's simple. This is an extension to Occupy Wall Street. This group is just giving the shaft to the shafters. Beautifully put. Barbara says, going back to our original story, anyone who has a loved one in a nursing home knows that neglect is nothing new. Underpaid and overstaffed overworked staff contribute to burnout. Caregiver to resident ratio is well below anything resembling a healthy outcome. Hopefully the attention that COVID has created will bring light to a problem that has existed for many, many years.
Well put.
All right. We are out of time. I want to thank everybody this morning. A reminder that we have Governor Cuomo coming up at 11:30.
Must listen.
He rarely starts on time, but we'll be here waiting beginning at 11:30, and hopefully it'll start soon after. We hope you will join for that. Meanwhile, coming up next, we have the Congressional Corner. Alan, a quick reminder for everyone that they can get in early, but we'll open up the lockbox on Monday, but they can do what they need to do over the weekend or today.
You mean today isn't Monday? Okay, that's great. Everybody do everything.
Today is whatever day you need it to be.
Everybody do everything you can. We can end this thing on Monday and then have no fun drive and be able to do what we've always been doing so well. WAMC.org or 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206.
Alan, have a beautiful weekend. Thank you for
too,
everything.
Joe.
Judah, thank Aaron Pasitti, David Soares. You guys rock. Thank you.